step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Now it's our turn to, sorry for the words, but put our balls on the table.
Remember, kids, this is not how you play hockey. It's just ugly.
I like it.
Who are you guys?
You know what? I love ice cream too.
Go back to Canada, Guy Lafleur.
Game on!
Yeah, game on!
Hello and welcome into the hockey show right here on Mile High Sports, Colorado's biggest and best live hockey radio show with your host, JJ Jerez. That's me. And Ryan Boulding of NHL.com.
That's me.
You have to get the mic ready.
I wasn't ready.
We're on air here.
I'm trying to get sound in both ears.
You're watching God knows what over there.
I got a bad cable.
Well, here we are. June 25th. That's the week I've had.
It's been a long year.
The playoffs have felt like a season of their own, right? I mean, you look back at round one and how long ago it was and how long ago it feels. I mean, this last week, I don't even remember being at the last hockey show. That's what's happened in my life in the last week. I'm like, when was the last time? Was it 2 weeks ago? No, it was last week. Let's get into some hockey, though. We have no matinee money pick today because there's no matinee game or game in general today. We're just talking hockey, talking last night. So that's what we're going to start with
here. Spare your wallets.
Yeah, spare your wallets. I won't lose you any money today. I mean, I'm sure by now people just disregard my picks anyway. But
I know I do.
We talked last week about how today could potentially be the end of the season. This could be the first day of the offseason. The Avalanche might have been able to win it, and they had the chance yesterday, right? The cup was in the building.
I mean, we were even talking about how are we going to do the show if the Avalanche win the Stanley Cup? Like, would the studio have burned down in the Colorado Avalanche win the Stanley Cup / Roe v. Wade riots of Denver?
The Great Denver Fire, yeah. And I mean, how sober would Ryan be after a celebration all night long of a Stanley Cup with all the media members, all the team, everybody?
Yeah,
that was another question.
Probably not very.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't be either, let's be honest. I'm glad we're here. We're sober.
We'd be playing guilty.
Probably beyond that. Probably beyond that. We'd be playing imprisoned. But let's get into last night's game. It was a heartbreaker, I think, for Avalanche fans, but at the same time, one of the best hockey games I've ever gotten to witness live. Lots of action both ways, lots of skill, lots of talent. I mean, last night's game was the epitome of what we thought this series was going to be, right? And it's absolutely living up to our expectations. Sure, it stinks that it's still dragging on. The Avalanche had a chance to close it out, and it's going to a sixth game in Tampa Bay where Avalanche fans might potentially miss the raising of the cup. But as far as series entertainment goes, taking the fanhood out of it, this has been an awesome series to follow so far.
Yeah, I felt like, you know, last year in the Blues series, I was like, oh, man, the Blues are really going to be a tough opponent. And the Avs just swept them, just crushed them. They didn't show up. And I was like, okay, am I wrong? Or is it the children who are wrong? And here we are again. The series starts, and I'm like, Tampa, they're legit. They're no joke. And then the Avs win in overtime, and then they just steamroll Tampa. And you're like, maybe we were all wrong. Mm-hmm. Maybe the whole third line that they got rid of and tried to replace was the key to this team.
We were starting to smell a sweep.
And then Tampa comes out and they have some pushback of their own and they kind of crush the Avalanche. And you're like, okay, this is where I thought it would be. And then the Avs win. And so the vibe going into yesterday, I think at Ball Arena in game five was, it feels almost inevitable, you know, like a stone rolling down the hill. Maybe it got hung up on a tree or in a willow bush or something, but like this stone is going to end at the bottom of this hill. And that would be the Avalanche winning. It felt that way before the game.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think this is probably the most evenly contested game of the series. Like, I know Tampa has won and kind of crushed the Avs. I know the Avs have blown out Tampa. I thought game one was an interesting back and forth, but really it felt like Tampa was holding on. And mm-hmm. In game four, it felt like Tampa was holding on. That one kind of slipped away from him. But this one was the one where I was like, okay, the Avalanche don't look as fast as they have all playoffs. You know, they look a little bit tired. Tampa is the walking wounded out there with Chernak playing hurt, with Cirelli. I mean, he could barely lift his arms up over, you know, his shoulders. You've got Nazem Kadri, who, despite scoring the game-winning goal in game four with a muffin of a shot, a lame duck, as Peyton Manning would say, he's not 100%. Like, there are things he can't do. He's mostly looking to pass. He had a pretty good shot last night from up on the point, maybe between the faceoff dots. But other than that, like, he's not 100%. Burakovsky can't play. You know, it's evening out physically, I think. And that seemed like the most evenly contested game of the series.
It's certainly a battle of attrition, right? I mean, both teams losing guys, both teams forcing guys. I mean, not forcing them, but guys forcing themselves to play. You know, on both sides. You look at the Avs lineup, Kadri wasn't even ready to go to start this series. Burakovsky was. They flip-flop. Now one's going to go in, one might not. You know, and basically, if you have Kadri on the second line, Burakovsky on the third line, Cogliano on the fourth line, you have a broken hand on every single line. So there's also a balance you want to kind of play with, you know, having injured guys out there. But it's been amazing to see, because I've seen a lot of these players up close, and both sides are just limping their way out of the building every single night. So it's not an exaggeration the way people say, hey, these guys, everybody's hurt, everybody's fighting through something, and that's what you're seeing. These guys are warriors in every sense of the word, and I've never seen it so up close and personal as I have this series.
Yeah, I think something that resonated with me this morning, John Cooper spoke at DIA before both teams flew out. And he talked about how he marvels at what his team has been able to accomplish in coming back to this point 3 years in a row. And he said, you know, it's not necessarily the game situations. It's the injuries. It's the block shots. It's the little things, that the kicks that they keep getting off the mat after. You know, he said it's the things that needle you, and kind of the voice in the back of your head saying, it's okay, you've won, you can just go home, you can be done, you know. And that team hasn't done it. Neither team has done it. Neither team has rolled over here. And you got to give a lot of credit to Tampa for what they've done. I think they are obviously the underdog in this series, but they are clawing their way back into a position to succeed. And that's impressive. But going back to your injury point, like, that's the thing. Like, both of these guys are injured, and it makes it very impressive that Tampa is able to do this a third year in a row, because you have a protracted, you know, off season, even with the COVID bubble season and the shortened season. Like, there's protracted off seasons where guys don't have time to fully heal, and they're here again. And it's a drain. It's a drain for us, for the media, just being there every day, traveling, all of those things. I'm not traveling, you are, but like, this whole thing, like, it is now the most battle of attrition part of a series it could possibly be.
You definitely get the sense from John Cooper just how much he truly, truly loves his players, right? Because that's exactly what he said multiple times. He's like, they've had every excuse to bow out of this. And it's almost like he's saying, I was expecting them to bow out of this. I was expecting them to not get this far. And here they are, still winning games on the road when they need it most. And that's what you look at last night's game five, and it was just such a shutdown game from both sides, right? Because you look at every single goal, and it was a weird goal. It was a trickle in. It was the goalie lost the puck. Nobody got beat clean. There were no backdoor tap-ins, right? It was all rebound goals, essentially, and scuffles around the net. So I think that's also a testament to where both teams are right now as far as desire, as far as how much they both want it so bad that they were both able to shut each other down last night, and really only goals that got through were goofy.
Yeah, I mean, there's the first one. The Jan Ruda goal is, I think, a clean shot that Kemper probably wants back. But the rest of it is chaos. He got a piece of it.
Yeah. I agree. His hands were slow. His reflexes were bad. I mean, you see Kemper's hands. We'll get into Kemper in a second. But you see his hands be slow often, right? We saw a couple sweet glove saves from him. And those of you watching on video probably can get a better idea of what I'm trying to explain right now. But he catches him by his ear, right?
Right. Which means, sweep up. You're faster up than down with your hands.
Sure, sure, but he also has to go backwards to catch it, right? As a goalie, you want your hands out here, and you want to attack that save, and you want to make it somewhere out here. But when you're making it back here, it's because the
out here means in front of you,
right?
For those listening on the radio, and back here means behind you.
Exactly. Right by your ear, essentially. Yeah. So, you know, I think his hands tend to be a little bit slow, but what he lacks in reflexes, he absolutely makes up for in size.
And that's
what makes him really good. So, I think everybody wants him to have that goal back, that first one. But I also, the fact that he got a piece of it, I still claim it as a goofy goal. You didn't really beat him clean.
In the end, like, you're not going to run Tampa out of the building every game. And so even with Jan Rutta's goal that gets in, I mean, that's not the deciding goal in the game. It's just a part of what happens. And the Avalanche have come back 9 times to win games, and they came back 2 out of 3 necessary times in the last game. So it's hard to blame that one goal. But like you said, a lot of fluky stuff. Like, it was a lot of block shots, a lot of hard hits, a lot of clear outs. Like, the Avalanche weren't as crisp as we've seen them be in their execution in all areas of the ice, I'd say. And it just felt like one of those games. Like, the longer it stays a one goal game, it could be anybody's game. Like, it's a coin toss almost.
Especially for Colorado too, right? They're always just right there within striking distance. As long as they can keep it a one goal game, you can never count them out. And that's what it was the entire game. After the first period, 1-0. After the second period, 2-1. After the third period, 3-2, right? And then the Avalanche tie it up there, 2-2. And I mean, I don't know what you were thinking, but in my mind, I'm like, we're going to overtime. Both teams are going to lock it up.
It definitely had that feel. Yeah.
But yeah, the Andre Palat gets one late there, and that's, you know, kind of the moment where you say, all right, we're going to game 6. That's when I started looking for fights.
Well, we've got some weirdness going on, right? Jan Rutta scores a goal. It's a big goal for him. It's his first of the playoffs. Nikita Kucherov scores his first of the series. He only has 8 goals. Remember, this is their superstar goal scorer player. First goal of the series, it comes in game 5. Like, it's the Avs have done a good job of shutting him down, just like Tampa's done a good job of shutting MacKinnon down.
And he hadn't scored since game 4 of the Rangers series. So that's 7 games he went, or I guess 6 without scoring, scores on the 7th.
Yeah, and so that's something to keep an eye on. Like, he's not a guy you want going, just like MacKinnon isn't a guy Tampa wants going. But MacKinnon has been producing. Nichushkin scores 1 goal. He almost gets he gets credited for the second goal, but we all saw Makar shot it. It bounced off of Chernak's gate and went in. You know, if Nichushkin scores that second goal, I'm putting him up very high in where I would regard him for the Conn Smythe. You know, I know Cale Makar, Nathan MacKinnon, Mikko Rantanen have had a lot of points. A lot of goals, a lot of points. But Nichushkin has just been the guy driving the goal scoring for the Avs.
A lot like Andre Palat has for Tampa Bay, right? Nichushkin seems to bring those at the most opportune moments and just, for lack of a better word, clutch, right? And that's exactly what Palat is. He doesn't do much throughout the game. He makes little noise and then scores those big game winners. He'll score on the power play. But that's another thing that another reason Kucherov doesn't have that many goals is their power play has not been firing.
It has been bad. I think this was their first power play goal of the series.
Yeah.
Kucherov's goal. Yeah. And on the other side, I mean, the Avalanche have been perfect The Avalanche have been about as perfect as you can be. They entered last night 6 for 13 on the power play. That's almost 50%. Like, every other main advantage they're scoring on, and then they get stoned. You know, it's like Tampa may be figuring this team out. And if the Avalanche don't have the speed that they've had all series, I mean, you know, things could be dire.
Which they might not in game 6, considering we know that Nazem Kadri thinks the ice is garbage, right? So it's tough to really get speed when you're skating in slush. But we got Greg Wyshynski ready to talk to us on the other line. He's hanging out at an airport making his way to Tampa Bay right now. So we'll get to him on the other side. Stick around through the break right here on the Hockey Show. We're going to get into the more details of the series with Greg of ESPN.com. So for Ryan, I'm JJ, Danny Bailey behind the glass. We'll be right back on the other side. This is Mile High Sports Hockey Show.
Right now, it's 16 minutes past the big hour. Is that not right, Mr. Scream? Great, good stuff. I think people are getting really cranked.
Welcome back. This is the Hockey Show with JJ and Ryan, Colorado's biggest and best live hockey radio show, coming into all the small things that swept the town took the town right off their feet. Man, I'm tired lately. Going to the phone.
Let's get it together.
Let's get to Greg Wyshynski of ESPN.com. I'm losing my voice. I'm losing my mind. Greg, How's it going out there? I guess my first question to you, let's break the ice here. Were you able to find the airline of choice? I know you and I were discussing yesterday which airline you were having to fly going to Tampa. What did you end up going with?
Well, I won't say what airline it is, but right. I will say that, like, you know how, like, sometimes you're really hungry for pizza, and then, like, the four top choices, they're, like, closed or whatever, and then you have to go to that fifth choice, and you're like, it's still pizza. It's kind of where I am on this flight, but I think I'm going to get there. That's all that really matters.
The page six in your pizza little black book?
Yeah, yeah, it's like that. By the way, I apologize. I wrote a feature on the origins of All the Small Things being an anthem for the Avalanche. There is an ESPN curse, and I believe that's the reason we didn't hear it last night. So I apologize for that.
So I actually brought it up that we hadn't heard it yet by about 3:46 left in the game. And my buddy, the DJ Triple T, my kickball liney, said that the game scenario hadn't called for it. As you know, there's a feel to when it plays, so I'm not necessarily sure that it's the ESPN curse, but it's possible. We could blame you.
No, I think it's fair. It's well known within the ESPN editorial Slack that whenever we, you know, do a story on somebody or have a story prepared on somebody, that inevitably it ruins them. So you could blame us for that. Although, again, like, I don't understand the dynamic of that thing. Because there was a moment where there was a stoppage with, like, less than 4 minutes to play. You know, the energy in the building is kind of, like, nervous. Like, it would seem like a good vibe, like a tension breaker, right, at that point. But I guess there's inherent rules on when you unleash a celebration of social harmony like that.
I think the unwritten rule is it has to be a lead. Because I remember back in, what was it, game two, the Avalanche didn't have a lead. The game was tied. He played it anyway, and I saw some fans with some uproar, kind of even adding him on Twitter that, hey, we don't even have the lead here. So,
it's almost become like its own thing, though. I don't know if they recognize that it is a motivating factor for the crowd. Like, they love that sing-along aspect. It may have brought more energy, but it's hard to say.
Yeah. Let's get in the series, Greg. You know, we see a lot of players limping their way out of the building and you know, a lot of players fighting through the pain and getting in the games anyway. But from a writing standpoint, from a journalism standpoint, I know you've been covering the playoffs for a long time now. I guess, how would you say your current compete level is as far as coverage, or, you know, having dragged this on for a while?
Well, I've been on the road since May 15th, I think it's been. I lucked out because I covered the Rangers a bit, and I got to go home for a little bit during that series, obviously. Mm-hmm. Still live in Brooklyn. So it hasn't been straight through, like, never going back to your own bed type deal. But I'm fine, man. Like, it's great. It's, like, it's the funnest thing ever is to do the Stanley Cup playoffs mainly because, like, in a normal, like, day-to-day of the job during the regular season, you're inundated with all of these different things that are pulling you in different directions. You have to kind of keep your eye on the entire league and trades and hirings and firings and that kind of thing. And, you know, in the playoffs, there's a few of those things. Like, I had to write about Luke Richardson getting hired in Chicago and stuff like that. But for the most part, it just becomes your routine. Like, you know, it's a day of travel. Now there's a game. I'll do TV before the game. I'll write a thing that talks about the game. After the game, I'll write a thing that talks about what happened. You know, it's like, it becomes almost like a little bit more streamlined and predictable, which is good. And it also allows you to just kind of, like, focus in on one team. Like, I'm not a beat writer, right? But, like, this series I am, because I'm only writing about the Lightning, pretty much. So that also is kind of beneficial, too. And as far as all the other stuff goes, I mean, I don't sleep anyway. So, like, the idea that I had an hour of sleep last night after the game, I came back, I watched the latest episode of The Boys, took a nap.
Oh, yeah. Herogasm.
I had to, right? It was trending. And then got up and went to your airport as early as possible because it is your airport.
Yeah.
You know, that's just how it works, man, in the playoffs. And I've been doing it long enough to be able to kind of maneuver my way through it.
Well, I was going to ask a question about the series, but now I got to ask a question about The Boys. I was struck by this feeling after watching the last episode that it's an incredible time to be alive where this show could exist. And it's something that when I was a child was probably never a possibility. Is this maybe the most ridiculous, wild television show in existence?
Well, it is, and it's a reminder that for all of the complaining about how superhero and genre of filmmaking and television has sort of taken over the culture, like, there's still room within it to do things like this, where it's, like, insane over-the-top violence, insane over-the-top in the last episode, sexuality, and then also, at the same time, sort of miraculously being this incredible parable about, you know, modern politics on both sides of the aisle. And so, like, it's a remarkable show, and you know, every time I watch it, I'm just like, oh yeah, you can definitely do really interesting things within this genre that people think is, like, sort of played out by now.
It's incredibly timely too. They killed me with the John Lennon Imagine celebrity cut up, which is so good and on the nose and kind of obscure, but kind of not obscure.
Well, that and then also the Kylie Jenner Pepsi ad that they took off the air, where she you know, participates in, like, the Black Lives Matter protest, and they did a parody of that too. So I mean, like, there's a lot that kind of goes into it, and some of it sort of spot the reference, and that's sort of fun. Not only, like, within superhero genre, but also in, like, pop culture. It's great. It's great. And it's kind of weird, as someone that watches it too, like, I'm sure you will agree that it's kind of weird how this streaming show on Amazon has sort of, like, pervaded through the culture a little bit. Like you can cite Homelander as a touchstone for a reference and people will understand it. That's kind of blows my mind that the show is big enough where you can do that.
Yeah. I found myself trying to explain it to somebody who didn't know yesterday. And I'm like, where do I start in explaining? And I just kind of go to, this is how I feel like it would be if superheroes really existed, but I'm boring JJ. He's looking at houses. So I got to get back to the series. Let's talk about injuries, Greg. Do you think that, you know, it's a war of attrition here, this final series? Tampa's been here. This is their third time now. Are we seeing, like, it getting to this critical mass point where it's kind of evened out? Like, it didn't seem like the Avalanche had their speed or their finish last night. Tampa may have evened it up. They're still the walking wounded. Like, are we seeing the great equalizer happening here?
No, I don't think so. I think we're seeing a Lightning team that is slowly falling apart. Like, you know, Chernak and Cirelli and Kucherov are all banged up. Point obviously hasn't played. The thing about the speed and all of that comes back to who is controlling the puck and who is controlling the tempo. And in the last three games, the Lightning have scored first. And when they score first, they dictate terms. When they didn't score first in the first two games, the Avalanche looked like they were going to skate them out of the building. And so that's part of what we're seeing now insofar as, like, oh, it's not like they've gotten their legs back. It's just that they're able to kind of get to their game better and put the Avalanche on their heels a little bit more when they get a lead. But the thing I'll come back to, if we're talking fatigue, overtime game four. I mean, like, that is the greatest example of what the Avalanche have to do in this series, which is to grind them down and get them to a point where they're just not going to be able to skate with them. That overtime was as dominant a period as we've seen, but they definitely deserve to win. And I think it's still a team that has the stamina advantage the deeper it goes in the series, even if the Lightning, you know, on the surface seem like they've gotten a second win.
This is the Hockey Show with JJ and Ryan. We're talking to Greg Wyshynski of ESPN.com. Greg, a lot of people in Avalanche land, Avalanche Twitter out there, were pretty upset about the refereeing in last night's game. You know, you saw with a couple beer cans on the ice afterwards, but they did have a hand in the game. I guess from your non-biased perspective, would you say last night's game was refereed fairly? I just want the Avalanche fans to hear it from your mouth rather than mine.
I don't think it was refereed fairly. I think it was a classic example of the officials, you know, through human nature, through, I don't know, pregame chats or whatever. It's one of those games where you went into it and you said, the Lightning are going to get their opportunities on the power play. And lo and behold, they did. It's a game five. The series has now gone six. I'm sure that makes everybody happy that it has gone six. And it's just one of those predictable things in hockey. Were there calls that were missed? Sure. The Makar call that was made to make it a 4-on-3, which again is like money in the bank for that power play, was, I don't think, a good call. I didn't think it was a really well-officiated game. There were definitely times when you felt like it had gotten away from them. And I think some of the calls that were made were a little bit specious.
What do you think about the goaltending? We've seen Andrei Vasilevskiy go from Homelander level superhero to, you know, mere mortal like the rest of us. We've seen Darcy Kuemper have these incredible moments and then allow some soft goals. You know, I know he got a piece of it, but Jan Rutta's goal comes to mind. Like, what are your thoughts on Darcy Kuemper and continuing to go back to him and just the goaltending in this series?
Well, I picked the Avalanche in six, and part of the reason is I thought that Frankie would be playing by now, to be honest with you. Like, I'm not a Kuemper guy. I think that he had a really strong second half of the season statistically, and he should be applauded for that. But by no means do I think he's been solid in the postseason outside of a couple games. And I think that there are way too many moments when he does what he did on the Rutta goal and when he does what he did on the Sergachev goal in game one. And those are two that need to be stopped. And you can make the argument that the Palat goal needed to be stopped too, even though it was definitely kind of a defensive breakdown in front of him. Yeah, I mean, like, Vasilevskiy isn't allowing anything soft right now, and he seems to be getting a little bit more confident as the series goes on. He doesn't have the aura of invincibility that he's had in previous runs for them, Vasilevskiy, but he certainly isn't giving you anything, you know, he's not giving out any gifts like Kuemper is right now.
Indeed, I agree with that 100%. Let's look at Nathan MacKinnon's game. He's only had one goal this entire series, three assists, but he's been firing the puck. He's pretty much averaging over five shots on goal per game. Do you think that there's more to be desired from Nathan MacKinnon's game this series so far, or how are you assessing his game right now?
Well, it's a tricky one, because if you ask the Avalanche, like, they've definitely tasked him with things that go beyond scoring goals. Like, you know, when they're on home ice, trying to push back against the Stamkos line and forecheck them and be more defensive against them. But I mean, like, you still have to finish. And he had that one opportunity last night where he beat Vasilevskiy 5-hole and it went wide. That really is one that you want back.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, listen, last night, you can look at it one of two ways. You can look at it as it was a one-goal game in which they didn't get really anything of consequence from MacKinnon outside of the assists, Landeskog, Rantanen, and Kadri. Or you can be a little concerned that in what was the biggest game of the postseason, biggest game of the season, biggest game of their lives, some of the biggest names on that team didn't produce. And that's kind of maybe a concern, or maybe it's like the game was still close even though that happened, and maybe that won't be a repeatable thing in the next two games.
Greg, we've heard John Cooper say he has the easy job. He just stands behind the bench and gets to watch hockey. But do you feel like there's a bit of a coaching battle going on here, and maybe, you know, that I know we're not going to say the tide is turning, because it still feels like it's inevitable that the Avalanche are going to get there at some point. But I guess, how do you view this coaching battle going on between kind of the original John Cooper and maybe the new John Cooper?
Well, I mean, first of all, obviously Cooper is winning the war of words. In the sense that he was able to change the conversation from his team losing an overtime game on home ice and then facing elimination to, you know, people diagnosing the catalyst for too many men on the ice penalty. I mean, he did that tactically, I think, and I think he did a really smart thing, because it changed the news cycle for a good 24 to 48 hours. As far as like line matching and things like that, I mean, you know, obviously he's done a really good job of knowing who to deploy against the Avalanche and getting some results there. But ultimately, the Lightning really have felt throughout the entire series that they had a recipe to beat the Avalanche. And they've felt that through the first two games, even though they couldn't really apply it, because they got down by multiple goals in the first 10 minutes. They took some dumb penalties. But throughout all of that, they're like, when we get to our game, we think we can beat them. And so what the Avalanche have to do is kind of put a little doubt in there, you know, put a little scare in them, you know, get a 3-1 lead at some point. Like, there's way too much confidence right now on the Lightning side as far as we know how to do this, and when we execute our plan, they can't beat us. Because there's been a couple games of proof of concept of that now.
All right, Greg, we're getting to the moment. I know you mentioned penalties. We talked about the officiating in the last game. You mentioned John Cooper changing the conversation to having people dissect what happened. There was a debate about whether the Avalanche had too many men on the ice in game four. They get called for too many men on the ice late in game five. I have to say, to the fans who think John Cooper got his way by whining and crying about this, I have to bring up a point, which is at least late in the regular season, the Avalanche were the second most penalized team for too many men on the ice calls. They had one late against Nashville that was controversial. I mean, it's not unfathomable to think that the Avalanche are maybe exploiting the line change to a degree, right? Given the history they've had this season.
Yeah, totally. And you know, I saw that penalty in the third more ironic than anything else. And I asked Cooper about it after the game, and he didn't really bite on the weird symmetry that hockey takes on sometimes, where that call doesn't get made in overtime, then the call does get made at a very critical juncture. Like he said, I mean, that reduced the time the Avalanche could pull Kemper from like 3 minutes to 40 seconds. I mean, that's a huge, huge call in that game. It changes everything as far as their ability to rally. The one in overtime was warranted, man. Like the thing that bothered me most about the conjecture about that thing was like some really, really smart people being like, well, that's something that happens all the time.
Yeah,
but it doesn't. It doesn't. I mean, because all the time is not in an overtime in a Stanley Cup final playoff game in which the game-winning goal resulted from the guy who jumped on early. Like, it doesn't happen all the time. It's okay to look at something and not have it be in a vacuum and say situationally it shouldn't have happened. So that was kind of like the thing that as hockey fans, we always do this. We always do the, you know, well, I mean, they missed that tripping call in the second period. I'm like, who cares? Like, it's a different magnitude of missed call, and it's okay to say that there are different magnitudes of missed calls.
When I think, too, like, the goal scored, the game is over, nothing's changing now. We're moving on from it. But it's not ridiculous to think, and I think even more so now that we saw it happen at the end of Game 5, that it was too many men in the end of Game 4. The result is the result, so if you're an Avs fan, what's it matter, right? And there's some right. Both-sidesism about it, too, where it's like, well, Tampa was changing and they had too many guys. But Tampa doesn't have the puck moving in on a rush. You know, like, they don't have possession. They're not in scoring. Those guys aren't defending. So, yeah, I think it's definitely interesting. It was ironic, like you said. I wish Cooper would have bitten because he tends to give good quotes, and that would have been something I wanted to hear from him. But I just wanted to bring it up because I don't think it's – I mean, it seems more likely after last night that it was too many men, and the Avs have done it quite a bit this season.
Yeah, and as far as, like, the penalties in Game 5, I mean, you know, maybe him saying something, you know, there was a bit of a, hey, let's make this hole for him kind of thing from the referees. I don't know. We don't get a chance to talk to them, so I don't know what really goes on in their heads. But as hockey fans, we've seen this movie before, and, like, a team, it's back against the wall, is usually the team is going to get the benefit of some calls in a potential elimination game, and they got them, and they took advantage of one. And again, like that's where the margin is right now. It's a soft Kemper goal. It's a power play goal. Like it's a real, really, really, really tight series, and it's going to tip either way depending on who gets a break or two.
And I think too, if you're complaining about a too many men on the ice call being missed, and everybody can go back and look and see it, officials are probably going to be watching out for that scenario in the future.
Sure. I mean, you know, these guys all talk after games. They get on a call with Steve Walkham, the director of officiating. They look for certain trends. It's no different than getting intel on a guy that dives or getting intel on a pick play that a team runs. Like, if there's a propensity for a team to do something, they are going to look for it. So, you know, maybe that's what led to the third period call. I don't know. But there certainly is that awareness from the officials as to, you know, what to look out for in a certain game.
Greg, last one from me. And, of course, this is Colorado's first Stanley Cup final in a long time. A lot of us media members, this is the first final we've covered. I've only been in a small handful of buildings, never been to New York where there's no quit. But I wanted to know, from your personal standpoint, where does Colorado fan base rank? I mean, in terms of in-game participation, awareness of the game, and obviously they're loud, but how loud are they comparatively?
They're really loud, but and it's great. I mean, it's a great atmosphere and it's super hype, and you could tell two things about them right now. One, that there's been this incredible hunger for this moment. The thing I always say about fan bases and passion is, like, the only way to really stoke passion in a market is by living and dying with your team in the playoffs, and Lord knows they've done that for the last 4 years, right? Like, it is no question that they've been through it. And to finally have this moment of potential catharsis, I think you can feel it in the building. But I'll be honest with you, man. Like, I'm a veteran of teams that have you know, failed in the postseason, and then some adversity hits, and the building reacts in kind. And I kind of felt that a little bit last night when the Lightning scored. I felt a little bit of the "here we go again" vibe. I felt a little bit of the "uh-oh," you know, the building got a little bit quieter than it had been. I don't know if you guys felt the same thing, but I felt a little bit of that. Hey, this was supposed to be a party kind of vibe last night, and someone has pooped on the party, and we don't really know how to handle it.
Between the atmosphere in the building and the tweets I've seen, I think you kind of nailed it on the head. Like there was an expectation that the Stanley Cup was going to be awarded, and I think fans almost feel like the series ended with that loss. Like there's still a game or two left, but it certainly felt that way.
I don't think that's the case. I mean, again, the percentages tell you that that's not the case. And also, keep in mind this. I mean, like, if you're a fan that felt pressure last night and felt, you know, the emotional roller coaster of the game, imagine what the players are feeling. Their families are there. They want to be the ones to win and hoist the cup in front of all their friends and all the fans. I mean, like, there's a lot on their shoulders, too, that might not necessarily be there in Game 6.
My last question for you, Greg, and we'll let you get out of here and back to your adventures in the Dallas airport. Maybe the dirtiest airport I've ever been to in America.
Hey, they got a Whataburger, though.
I got to ask you.
They also have the salt lick for barbecue. Oh,
see, that's worth it. That's worth it. Yeah. That's fine. Yeah. Just don't touch anything in the bathrooms. They're disgusting. I got to ask you, how does Colorado rank in, let's say, press box snacks? Chips, candy, chocolate donuts.
Oh, I saw you get real excited about some salt and vinegar chips last night, Greg.
Yeah, hit us with your ranking.
I'm actually writing something for the Puck Soup Patreon about my culinary travels on the road, including the Cherry Cricket and Hut, which are two places I really enjoy in Denver. It's incredible. It's like when you have a friend as a kid who has like the coolest pantry of snacks and you just want to go to his house all the time. I mean, like I was talking with Joe Smith from The Athletic last night. And cause I noticed that he was eating a sleeve of chocolate mini donuts I had as well. And we both were like, yeah, we planned our day our dinner around the ability to finish it off with a sleeve of chocolate mini donuts at the game. And it's incredible. It's an incredible array of sweets. Do they have that in the regular season too, or is it just like a playoff thing?
It's a playoff thing. It's been heaven. I've probably gained some weight. Mm-hmm. I just pulled out, I don't know if you can hear the crinkling over the mic, I just pulled out a packet of dark chocolate Milano Pepperidge Farm cookies that I had to squirrel away last night because I didn't have room in my gut for them, and so it's a day after snack for me. But yes,
not to be outdone, Tampa has a thing between the second and third period
where they
bring up chicken tenders and churros, which is
insane.
Churros aren't even that good, but like anytime you get like fried chicken with cinnamon sugar, it's a pretty good deal. So they're doing their part too.
Indeed. Well, Greg, we'll see you tomorrow night. Thanks for hanging out with us here and very generous with your time. And good luck on the flights. I hope you make them.
Thank you very much.
Have a good day. There you have it. Greg Wyshynski, ESPN.com. Always a treat to talk to.
Greg reminded me when he said, you know, you have that friend with the best pantry. Of a story when I was a kid, we used to sleep over at my friend's house. I won't name him. He'll never listen to this, but I don't want him to know. I don't want him to know I'm admitting guilt here. But he had the best pantry. And he was also like the snack dictator and would not let us eat snacks. He'd just be like, no, you guys can't have anything. We'd be like, we're hungry. He's like, too bad. You can't have anything. So at sleepover time, there'd be like, I don't know, five of us spending the night, and he'd fall asleep, and then we would go upstairs and raid the pantry and eat all the good snacks as a kind of an FU for, you know, being the pantry Nazi that he was.
Got him.
And his mom would be like, why are there crumbs and stuff? Was anybody eating food? And he'd be like, what the heck? And we're like, we were sleeping. I don't know what happened.
He's not lying,
sleeping
though.
With full bellies.
The chicken tenders and churros are a strange combination. You're like, do I dip my churros in the honey mustard or
oh, I could go for a churro right now. The Avs used to do, I don't know if you remember, churros at the press meals, and they were always like sticks. They're just like rock hard. You're like, this is everything that a churro isn't.
Well, we'll get into tomorrow night's game here in the next segment and, you know, get ready for that because there's a good chance the Avalanche win it there too. So the cup will be in the building. So we'll get into what has to happen tomorrow and what we think is going to happen. So stick around through the break. JJ Jerez, Ryan Boulding, right here on Mile High Sports. This is the Hockey Show.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
All I need is your love.
Let's go, Colorado!
Welcome back. I'm gonna let this one breathe for a second because it gets me going. I like this one. I specifically requested this song. Danny politely obliged. It's EDM, so it might not float everyone's boat. But the reason
is this Chris?
No.
So it's not a beacon of positivity?
This song is song number 3. On Tampa Bay Lightning's pregame warm-up playlist.
Oh.
And it...
it's going to be one of those shows.
As the kids say...
It slaps.
It slaps. It slaps. And I don't know if it's the sound system in Amalie Arena.
The bass.
But that whole sound system just sounds so good. And I just have to give them credit because I like their music choice throughout the entire game. And just seems like a more modern... You know, because I like DJ Triple T. Don't get me wrong. But I think the culture in Colorado also calls for, you know, a lot of 80s, 90s rock / metal, which I think Tampa Bay kind of stays away from. They stick to more, you know, the bassy songs.
The Miami scene?
EDM. Yeah, exactly. And I love it.
I hate the Avs warm-up. I know the players pick it. It's probably all McKinnon. It used to be Tyson Berry and Nate McKinnon. I used to go get their selections and bring them to DJ Triple T.
I've always wondered how. So it's typically one or two players. It's not like, hey, you pick a song. Everybody picks one song.
No, yeah. I mean, I talked to Alex Newhook today, and he and Bo and Byram listened to country music on the drive to the airport. So I'm sure they're not thrilled.
Ugh.
But it is what it is. I think it's terrible, but I did notice last night, like, the crowd was loud and all I could really hear was the bass of whatever the final song was. Like, they were cheering McKinnon when he got off the ice, and then they were booing, like, Hagel shot a puck down into the Avs net. Corey Perry did like a arch shot fadeaway kind of thing. And the crowd was really loud, so all I could hear was the bass, and I was like, I could understand this being like a good vibe, just this one bit of it. But I mean, I've talked to people in the media who are like, this doesn't get me amped. Like, you should be playing music that gets everyone amped, ready to go, right?
It gets me amped.
Well, maybe that song gets you amped. I don't know.
Well, I like Kodak Black. I know you don't. You just shook your head at me.
It's too much bass. I've become that guy.
Turn it down!
Yeah. I listen to the music in my car at break your eardrums levels, but it's too loud at Ball Arena.
In Tampa Bay, they have a wrestler who gets the crowd fired up on the Jumbotron, and he screams way too loud. That there, I felt like you. I'm like, can we just turn it down a notch?
That's
just
Minnesota, too. Minnesota's like PA people. They're just like screaming all the time. You're like, why are you screaming at me?
So all of this is stuff the Avalanche are going to have to go through for game 6 tomorrow, heading back to Amalie Arena. I guess let's get into what you think has to happen. I mean, what has to clean up? What do the Avalanche have to do to raise that cup tomorrow, or do you even think that's the scenario? Do you think it comes back to Game 7 here on Tuesday?
I think it's the simplest answer is the one that we've had bashed over our heads and hammered into our brains for months on end now, which is the Avs just need to play their game. And
play
I think,
to their identity.
I think they've gotten away from it a little bit, but like they're the faster team. They're probably the least injured team. They're the team with the most firepower. They've had more depth scoring in general. You know, I think they've had a lot of heroes up until this point, and there's a reason for it. The way this team is constructed, the depth it has, but they're going to have to start finding lanes. They're going to have to start being tricky. Like, no team creates chaos better than the Avalanche. And I just kept noticing last game how they were caught chasing. Like, right before Kucherov scores, like, they're chasing the puck around and guys pulled out of position, and that's what happened. And I also was struck by something Steven Stamkos said, where he was asked about guys like Cale Makar getting in lanes and blocking shots, and he, I think, ultimately got a goal or something. I forget the scenario he was discussing, but basically the discussion was, you know, after a couple shots, maybe it wasn't even Stamkos, but after a couple of shots of
good story,
it could have been Pilat, actually. I don't know. Who knows? What day is it? You said January at the start of the show.
Yeah. Geez.
The point was, they said that after, you know, a couple of shots were blocked, the expectation from the Avs is to block the shot. And the expectation from Tampa was the Avs will block the shot. So then you pivot to something else and you make a different move. And even Sergachev talked about the goal today and how he, you know, wanted to take a shot, and he kept having an opportunity to take a shot in the third period in the game, but he didn't want to bounce the puck off a shin pad. He didn't want to sacrifice a shot that would be blocked. So he passes it to Hedman, and Hedman makes a pass to Pilat, and boom, it's in, right? And those are the kind of things, like, the Avalanche need to do that also. And I think they've gotten away from that. They're allowing shots to get blocked. They're allowing to be pushed out the outside. Injuries are a factor in that, but I mean, even Leon Draisaitl on one foot is dangerous. You know, even Nazem Kadri with, you know, one thumb is dangerous. So find a way to be dangerous. That's the recipe for success for the Avalanche.
Yeah, I think you hit it on the head. Tampa Bay absolutely sacrificing everything they can to block shots so far this series. But at the same time, I don't think the Avalanche are necessarily taking the smartest shots. It reminds me a lot of when Tyson Barrie was in town, and he was the king at that. He was so good at putting shots right into the shin pads of whoever's coming right at him. So you see Tampa Bay, and they're really good at making that extra pass, right? There's a fine line between being too cute and trying to pass one too many times and actually making smart, aggressive passes. And I think that Tampa Bay Lightning, that's one of their best strengths, is finding those passes that you don't expect coming. The one that you think he's going here, and he ends up actually going a drop pass and somebody's wide open back door.
And there's a degree of that, too. I thought Tampa looked very good at the start of Game 6, but they were overpassing themselves out of place. Like, there was a point where Steven Stamkos, like, passed on a grade-A scoring opportunity to nobody, to a two-on-one the other direction, right? And you're like, well, a shot into the goalie's chest is better in that situation than what the result was. So there's a degree of, you need to create chaos, but it needs to be controlled chaos, right? The thing the Avs do is they move around, they can look for the right pass, but it's the bodies ebbing and flowing and circling and doing all those dips and dives that they do, where all of a sudden somebody has free space and time to shoot and they're in a good position. That's what they need to do.
And I'm not sure, you know, you said Colorado is probably one of the healthier teams going through these playoffs, but at this point, I'm not sure I can agree with that, because I feel like, yeah, to the eye, it looks like that's the case, but, you know, heading into the playoffs, the Avs were without half their team, right? We remember Devon Taves was out for a while. Whatever was ailing him never really got addressed. He was just like, all right, it's playoff time. Time to put my gear back on. You know, I don't think Nathan MacKinnon is 100%, because he's repeatedly brought up how everybody in that locker room is dealing with something. Mikko Rantanen said the same thing, which tells me he's dealing with something. We know Landeskog and his maintenance days, plus the knee thing he had going on. Cale Makar, I mean, I feel like this is one of the longest stretch of consecutive games we've seen Cale Makar play in a long time, because you look back at the last few regular seasons, there's stints, there's little windows where he has to miss a handful of games at a time. So, I think it's like we talked about, it's a battle of attrition, right? It's who wants it more, who's going to make the least mistakes, and who's going to capitalize on the other's mistakes. So,
and some of these guys have been playing heavy minutes too, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I know they've leaned on Cale Makar very heavily in the regular season. He still played 28 minutes last night, and that's a lot. Like, Devon Taves played 25, 38. I mean, 28 minutes a game most of the season, all
almost
playoffs,
half.
Those are hard minutes to play. Hard minutes.
Yeah, and Coach Bednar, I think he's at the point where it's like, all right, we can't be conservative with our guys. We're going to play our best guys and play them as many minutes as we physically can, because that's what this is going to take. And I think that's what a game six victory is going to take is those top guys stepping up, right? Nathan McKinnon's only goal of this series that we talked about with Greg Wyshynski there bounced off his foot. It wasn't even a clean goal, right? It was more of a, oops, I scored. So, you know, I see Nathan McKinnon wanting it, and he's wanting it so bad that we're seeing him revert to, I guess, the negatives of his game of old, where he
does too much.
He tries so hard to make an impact that he does too much, and then next thing you know, he's shooting him 6 feet over the crossbar. But still got six shots on goal last night. He had that awesome play between Vasilevsky's leg that just barely missed the post. Yeah. So I think,
and he also got wrecked by Sergachev, which is, you know, a not common thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's a fast guy.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, that's the thing. They're putting bodies on him. Every time he's around the puck or has the puck, you see two or usually three guys surrounding him and trying to get that thing from it, and it's working. So if he could find a way to just break through, get one goal, and I think the Avalanche are in good shape, because as I brought up last week, that top line in the past meetings between these two teams has been the most pivotal reason the Avalanche won when they won. So if you have Landeskog buzzing, you have Nathan McKinnon, and you have Mikko Rantanen putting up points, then you're in a good position. When you're relying on the injured guys, and when you're relying on the depth like JT Compher, Andrew Cogliano, you know, I think that's where things get sticky. You need your big guys to be your big guys tomorrow.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, we've seen JT Compher be the hero before, and I don't expect anything less from him in the next game. I know people are down on him. I don't understand it.
He has that gene, though, right? Like yesterday at morning skate, it's a big game, the biggest game we've seen in Denver in 21 years. And the two guys they send to talk to us before the game was JT Compher and Bowen Byram. And I'm like, I think that was intentional, because those two are the most flatlined emotional players you've ever seen, right? It could be the best game of Compher's life. It could be the worst game of Compher's life. He's going to respond to you in the exact same manner. Same thing with Bowen Byram. It doesn't seem like Bowen Byram gets too high on the highs or low on the lows.
JT Compher in that press conference is me anytime I see a job description where they're looking for a highly motivated, high energy person. And I'm like, nah, I can't apply. I'm JT Compher in that press conference. Just right there, flat, dead. Right there. But he's a gamer, and I think he's played well. I don't understand why he's getting so much hate. Like, sure, he made a poor decision in negating a looming power play during the delay call. He grabs a stick. It's unnecessary, right? But I mean, JT Compher in the series before was a hero. In the early games was a hero. You know, like, people were fawning over his ability. I was talking about how, did you ever expect him to be the lone piece left from the Ryan O'Reilly trade, right? And somehow we've gotten to this. Like,
well, don't forget how trade deadline, how he was a lot of Avs fans' favorites to get shipped out for maybe a Claude Giroux or whoever they brought in. Ended up being Tyson Jost, really the only piece that got shipped out, but it could have just as easily been JT Compher.
Yeah, I just think he deserves a little more credit.
I agree. It's asinine how many people were in my comments last night saying, you know, after I reported that we saw him on the golf cart heading to the X-ray room, how many people were, I guess, just calling him bad words.
Yeah, naughty stuff. Naughty, naughty. I tweeted today that Jared Bednar said Val Nichushkin, whom I saw coming out of the X-ray room, having gotten an X-ray on a leg, it appeared, and JT Compher, who you saw getting checked out, both got checked out last night and are both expected to be good to go for game six. And then my mentions started filling up with poop emojis and stuff. And I'm like, hey, save it for when I tweet naughty words on accident about shots hitting Cale Makar's foot.
Stinging shots, too.
Stinging,
right?
Stingers.
Yeah, we'll see what happens for game six. I think, you know, a lot's riding on the goaltending too. We've talked about Kemper a lot throughout this whole series. Vasilevsky, I think you nailed it on the head. He's been human. We've seen not the same Vasilevsky of past. We've seen him up and down. Same thing with Kemper. So anything can happen with these two goalies, but, you know, Vasilevsky's big time in elimination games. So, he wants to do everything he can to not let his team get eliminated. Darcy Kemper wants to do the same, but I'm not sure he's as capable.
Here's what's wild, right? The Avalanche haven't lost consecutive games in this postseason. They've lost four games the whole postseason.
Mm-hmm.
Four. People are panicking. People are melting down. Fans are freaking out. You've lost four games. You're up 3-2 in the series. You're playing with house money last game. You're playing with house money this game. The anarchist in me wants this to go to game seven.
Oh, yeah.
But I think Avs fans maybe should want that, but should be worried about it. But you could win the cup at home. I don't know how to predict this series. I haven't known how to bet this series. I've been wrong almost every time I've thought anything. Yesterday, like I said, it felt inevitable that the Avs would just close it out, and they didn't. I don't know how to predict this series, so I'm going to stick with my anarchist pick, and I'm going to say it's coming back for Game 7.
I would like that just because I'd love the chance to see the cup get raised in Denver itself.
And
I
mean, we get to go out on the ice for interviews if that's the case.
Right.
Well, you could in Tampa.
Yes.
Because you're going to be there. But
I'll
not
be
me.
There. Flight's leaving at 6 in the morning tomorrow. Blah.
I'll be at the watch parties. So come, don't come find me.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see how it all shakes out. I'm both nervous and excited, I guess.
Danny, you're the calm presence in the studio here. What is your prediction?
I thought all along this was probably a 7-game series, and I'm kind of with you, Ryan. Like, I want 7 games. I think it's the best story, but it does make me a little worried.
Yeah. I mean, if you're a fan, you kind of got to be a masochist to want that to happen.
Yeah. I mean, I called game 6 from the start of this series, so I guess I'm sticking with it. Avalanche have been solid on the road, and it just seems very fitting that they would, get it done on the road this year because That's just who they've been. But the bets I'm looking at are the prop bets on shots. Nathan MacKinnon specifically. He's often around a 4.5, maybe 5.5. He's been throwing pucks at the net like crazy, especially in a big game where, again, they need him the most. He tries to do a lot. So that's my one betting advice, I guess, for tomorrow. Other than that, I got no idea what's going to happen.
Yeah, I got nothing.
Right on.
We'll find out like you find out, everybody.
Exactly. So thanks for hanging out with us here on our hour of the hockey show on Mile High Sports. It's been a blast and obviously the last one of the season. So we'll be back next week to put a bow on the Stanley Cup playoffs and we'll see where we go this offseason. But, you know, either way, it's been a fun ride throughout this year. So thanks for hanging out with us. This is technically, I call it year 3 of the hockey show. I can't believe we made it this far. We're getting better every day. And yeah, thanks to all our great guests, including Greg Wyshynski, who I think is now in the lead.
He may have taken the title. Let me pull up the stats. He is tied with Mike Chambers at 4.
For the most appearances on the hockey show. I was rubbing shoulders in Tampa, so we might have some newer national name guests here coming up down the line, but we'll see how
we
that goes.
We should print out business cards.
I agree. With our pictures on them, back to back.
Charlie's Angel style.
Yeah. Right on, guys. Thanks so much for hanging out with us here on the hockey show. We'll be back next week, and try to breathe through game 6. Other than that, enjoy the ride and enjoy the potential Stanley Cup championship. Again, for Ryan, I'm JJ, Danny Bailey behind the glass. Thank you, Danny, as always. We'll catch you next week. Thanks for hanging.
I know who I want to take.